Chapter 33. As he ran, Bruce looked across 100 yards of open ground to the edge of the forest. He felt the wind of the next bullet as it cracked past him. If he uses rapid fire, he'll get me even at 300 yards. And Bruce jinked his run like a jackrabbit, the blood roaring in his ears, fear driving his feet. Then all around him the air burst asunder, buffeting him so he staggered. The vicious whip-whip-whip of bullets filled his head. I can't make it. 70 yards to the shelter of the trees, 70 yards of open meadowland, and above him the commanding mass of the kopje. The next burst is for me. It must come now. And he flung himself to one side so violently that he nearly fell. Again the air was ripping to tatters close beside him. I can't last. He must get me. In his path was an ant heap, a low pile of clay, a pimple on the open expanse of earth. Bruce dived for it, hitting the ground so hard that the wind was forced from his lungs out through his open mouth. The next burst of gunfire kicked lumps of clay from the top of the ant heap, showering Bruce's back. He lay with his face pressed into the earth, wheezing with the agony of empty lungs, flattening his body behind the tiny heap of clay. Will it cover me? Is there enough of it? And the next hail of bullets thumped into the ant heap, throwing fountains of earth, but leaving Bruce untouched. I'm safe. The realization came with a surge that washed away his fear. But I'm helpless, answered his hatred, pinned to the earth for as long as Hendry wants to keep me here. The rain fell on his back, soaking through his jacket, coldly caressing the nape of his neck and dribbling down over his jaws. He rolled his head sideways, not daring to lift it an inch, and the rain beat onto the side of his face. The rain, falling faster, thickening, hanging from the clouds like the skirts of a woman's dress, curtains of rain, greying out the edge of the forest, leaving no solid shapes in the mist of falling liquid mother-of-pearl. Still gasping, but with the pain slowly receding, Bruce lifted his head. The kopje was a vague blue-green shape ahead of him. Then it was gone, swallowed by the eddying columns of rain. Bruce pushed himself up onto his knees, and the pain in his chest made him dizzy. Now, he thought, now, before it thins, and he lumbered clumsily to his feet. For a moment he stood clutching his chest, sucking for breath in the haze of water-filled air, and then he staggered towards the edge of the forest. His feet steadied under him, his breathing eased, and he was into the trees. They closed round him protectively. He leaned against the rough bark of one of them and wiped the rain from his face with the palm of his hand. The strength came back to him, and with it his hatred and his excitement. He unslung the rifle from his shoulder and stood away from the tree with his feet planted wide apart. "Now, my friend," he whispered, "we fight on equal terms." He pumped around into the chamber of the FN and moved towards the kopje, stepping daintily, the weight of the rifle in his hands, his mind suddenly sharp and clear, vision enhanced, feeling his strength and the absence of fear like a song within him, a battle hymn. He made out the loom of the kopje through the dripping rain-heavy trees, and he circled out to the right. There's plenty of time, he thought. I can afford to case the joint thoroughly. He completed his circuit of the rock pile. The kopje, he found, was the shape of a galleon sinking by the head. At one end the high double castles of the poop, from which the main deck canted steeply forward, as though the prow were already under water. This slope was scattered with boulders and densely covered with dwarf scrub, an interwoven mass of shoulder-high branches and leaves. Bruce squatted on his haunches with the rifle in his lap and looked up the ramp at the twin turrets of the kopje. The rain had slackened to a drizzle. Hendry was on top. Bruce knew he would go to the highest point. Strange how height makes a man feel invulnerable, makes him think he's a god. And since he had fired upon them, he must be in the turret nearest the vley, which was slightly the higher of the two, its summit crowned by a patch of stunted broom bush. So now I know exactly where he is, and I will wait half an hour. He may become impatient and move. If he does, I'll get a shot at him from here. Bruce narrowed his eyes, judging the distance. About 200 yards. He adjusted the rear sight of the FN and then checked the load, felt in the side pocket of his jacket to make sure the 2 extra clips of ammunition were handy, and settled back comfortably to wait. "Curry, you son of a bitch, where are you?" Hendry's shout floated down through the drizzling rain, and Bruce stiffened. I was right. He's on top of the left-hand turret. "Come on, bucko. I've been waiting for you since yesterday afternoon." Bruce lifted the rifle and sighted experimentally at a dark patch on the wall of the rock. It would be difficult shooting in the rain, the rifle slippery with wet, the fine drizzle clinging to his eyebrows and dewing the sights of the rifle with little beads of moisture. "Hey, Curry, how's your little French piece of pussy? Man, she's hot, that thing, isn't she?" Bruce's hands tightened on the rifle. "Did she tell you how I gave her the old business? Did she tell you how she loved it? You should have heard her panting like a steam engine. I'm telling you, Curry, she just couldn't get enough." Bruce felt himself start to tremble. He clenched his jaws, biting down until his teeth ached. "Steady, Bruce, my boy. That's what he wants you to do." The trees dripped steadily in the silence, and a gust of wind stirred the scrub on the slope of the kopje. Bruce waited, straining his eyes for the first hint of movement on the left-hand turret. "You yellow or something, Curry? You scared to come on up here? Is that what it is?" Bruce shifted his position slightly, ready for a snapshot. "Okay, bucko. I can wait. I've got all day. I'll just sit here thinking about how I mucked your little bit of French. I'm telling you, it was something to remember. Up and down, in and out, man, it was something." Bruce came carefully up onto his feet behind the trunk of the tree and once more studied the layout of the kopje. "If I can move up the slope, keeping well over to the side until I reach the right-hand turret, there's a ledge there that'll take me to the top. I'll be 20 or 30 feet from him, and at that range it'll all be over in a few seconds." He drew a deep breath and left the shelter of the tree. Wally Hendry spotted the movement in the forest below him. It was a flash of brown quickly gone, too fast to get a bead on it. He wiped the rain off his face and wriggled a foot closer to the edge. "Come on, Curry, let's stop buggering about," he shouted, and cuddled the butt of his rifle into his shoulder. The tip of his tongue kept darting out and touching his lips. At the foot of the slope he saw a branch move slightly, stirring when there was no wind. He grinned and snuggled his hips down onto the rock. "Here he comes," he gloated. "He's crawling up under the scrub. I know you're sitting down there. Okay, Curry, I can wait also." Halfway up the slope, the top leaves of another bush swayed gently, parting and closing. "Yes," whispered Wally. "Yes." And he clicked off the safety catch of the rifle. His tongue came out and moved slowly from one corner of his mouth to the other. "I've got him for sure. There. You'll have to cross that piece of open ground. Couple of yards, that's all, but it'll be enough." He moved again, wriggling a few inches to one side, settling his aim into the gap between 2 large grey boulders. He pushed the rate of fire selector onto rapid, and his forefinger rested lightly on the trigger. "Hey, Curry, I'm getting bored. If you're not going to come up, how about singing to me or cracking a few jokes?" Bruce Curry crouched behind a large grey boulder. In front of him were 3 yards of open ground, and then the shelter of another rock. He was almost at the top of the slope, and Hendry had not spotted him. Across the patch of open ground was good cover to the foot of the right-hand turret. It would take him 2 seconds to cross, and the chances were that Hendry would be watching the forest at the foot of the slope. He gathered himself like a sprinter on the starting blocks. "Go," he whispered, and dived into the opening and into a hellstorm of bullets. One struck his rifle, tearing it out of his hand with such force that his arm was paralysed to the shoulder. Another stung his chest, and then he was across. He lay behind the far boulder, gasping with the shock, and listened to Hendry's voice roaring triumphantly. "Fooled you, you stupid bastard! Been watching you all the way up from the bottom." Bruce held his left arm against his stomach. The use of it was returning as the numbness subsided, but with it came the ache. The top joint of his thumb had caught in the trigger guard and been torn off. Now the blood welled out of the stump thickly and slowly, dark blood the colour of apple jelly. With his right hand he groped for his handkerchief. "Hey, Carrie, your rifle's lying there in the open. You might need it in a few minutes. Why don't you go out and fetch it?" Bruce bound the handkerchief tightly round the stump of his thumb, and the bleeding slowed. Then he looked at the rifle where it lay 10 feet away. The foresight had been knocked off, and the same bullet that had amputated his thumb had smashed into the breech, buckled the loading handle and the slide. He knew that it was damaged beyond repair. "Think I'll have me a little target practice," shouted Hendry from above, and again there was a burst of automatic fire. Bruce's rifle disappeared in a cloud of dust and flying rock fragments, and when it cleared, the woodwork of the rifle was splintered and torn, and there was further damage to the action. "Well, that's that," thought Bruce. "Rifle's wrecked, Shemaine has the pistol, and I have only one good hand. This is going to be interesting." He unbuttoned the front of his jacket and examined the welt that the bullet had raised across his chest. It looked like a rope burn, painful and red, but not serious. He rebuttoned the jacket. "Okay, Bruce, baby, the time for games is over. I'm coming down to get you." Hendry's voice was harsh and loud, filled with confidence. Bruce rallied under the goading of it. He looked round quickly. Which way to go? Climb high so he must come up to get at you. Take the right-hand turret, work round the side of it, and wait for him on the top. In haste now, spurred by the dread of being the hunted, he scrambled to his feet and dodged away up the slope, keeping his head down, using the thick screen of rock and vegetation. He reached the wall of the right-hand turret and followed it round, found the spiral ledge that he had seen from below, and went on to it, up along it like a fly on a wall, completely exposed, keeping his back to the cliff of granite, shuffling sideways up the 18-inch ledge, with the drop below him growing deeper with each step. Now he was 300 feet above the forest, and could look out across the dark green land to another row of kopjes on the horizon. The rain had ceased, but the cloud was unbroken, covering the sky. The ledge widened, became a platform, and Bruce hurried across it round the far shoulder and came to a dead end. The ledge had petered out, and there was only the drop below. He had trapped himself on the side of the turret. The summit was unattainable. If Hendry descended to the forest floor and circled the kopje, he would find Bruce completely at his mercy, for there was no cover on the narrow ledge. Hendry could have a little more target practice. Bruce leaned against the rock and struggled to control his breathing. His throat was clogged with the thick saliva of exhaustion and fear. He felt tired and helpless. His thumb throbbed painfully, and he lifted it to examine it once more. Despite the tourniquet, it was bleeding slowly, a wine-red drop at a time. Bleeding. Bruce swallowed the thick, gluey stuff in his throat and looked back along the way he had come. On the grey rock, the bright red splashes stood out clearly. He had laid a blood spore for Hendry to follow. All right, then. Perhaps it is best this way. At least I may be able to come to grips with him. If I wait behind this shoulder until he starts to cross the platform, there's a 300-foot drop on one side. I may be able to rush him and throw him off. Bruce leaned against the shoulder of granite, hidden from the platform, and tuned his ears to catch the first sound of Hendry's approach. The clouds parted in the eastern sector of the sky, and the sun shone through, slanting across the side of the kopje. It would be better to die in the sun, thought Bruce. A sacrifice to the sun god thrown from the roof of the temple. And he grinned without mirth, waiting with patience and with pain. The minutes fell like drops into the pool of time, slowly measuring out the ration of life that had been allotted to him. The pulse in his ears counted also, and this breath that he drew and held and gently exhaled, how many more would there be? I should pray, he thought. But after this morning when I prayed that it should not rain and the rains came and saved me, I will not presume again to tell the old man how to run things. Perhaps he knows best after all. Thy will be done, he thought instead. And suddenly his nerves jerked tight as a line hit by a marlin. The sound he had heard was that of cloth brushing against rough rock. He held his breath and listened, but all he could discern was the pulse in his ears and the wind in the trees of the forest below. The wind was a lonely sound. Thy will be done, he repeated without breathing, and heard Hendry breathe close behind the shoulder of rock. He stood away from the wall and waited. Then he saw Hendry's shadow thrown by the early morning sun along the ledge, a great distorted shadow on the grey rock. Thy will be done. And he went round the shoulder fast, his good hand held like a blade and the weight of his body behind it. Hendry was 3 feet away, the rifle at high port across his chest, standing close in against the cliff, the cup-shaped steel helmet pulled low over the slitty eyes, and little beads of sweat clinging in the red-gold stubble of his beard. He tried to drop the muzzle of the rifle, but Bruce was too close. Bruce lunged with stiff fingers at his throat, and he felt the crackle and give of cartilage. Then his weight carried him on, and Hendry sprawled backwards onto the stone platform, with Bruce on top of him. The rifle slithered across the rock and dropped over the edge, and they lay chest to chest with legs locked together in a horrible parody of the love act. But in this act we do not procreate, we destroy. Hendry's face was purple and swollen above his damaged throat, his mouth open as he struggled for air, and his breath smelt old and sour in Bruce's face. With a twist towards the thumb, Bruce freed his right wrist from Hendry's grip, and lifting it like an axe, brought it down across the bridge of Hendry's nose. Twin jets of blood spouted from the nostrils and gushed into his open mouth. With a wet, strangling sound in his throat, Hendry's body arched violently upwards, and Bruce was thrown back against the side of the cliff with such force that for a second he lay there. Wally was on his knees, facing Bruce, his eyes glazed and sightless, and the strangling, rattling sound spraying from his throat in a pink cloud of blood. With both hands he was fumbling his pistol out of its canvas holster. Bruce drew his knees up onto his chest, then straightened his legs in a mule kick. His feet landed together in the centre of Hendry's stomach, throwing him backwards off the platform. Hendry made that strangled bellow all the way to the bottom, but at the end it was cut off abruptly. And afterwards there was only the sound of the wind in the forest below. For a long time, drained of strength and the power to think, Bruce sat on the ledge with his back against the rock. Above him the clouds had rolled aside, and half the sky was blue. He looked out across the land, and the forest was lush and clean from the rain. And I am still alive. The realization warmed Bruce's mind as comfortably as the early sun was warming his body. He wanted to shout it out across the forest. I am still alive! At last he stood up, crossed to the edge of the cliff, and looked down at the tiny crumpled figure on the rocks below. Then he turned away and dragged his beaten body down the side of the turret. It took him 20 minutes to find Wally Hendry in the chaos of broken rock and scrub below the turret. He lay on his side with his legs drawn up as though he slept. Bruce knelt beside him and drew his pistol from the olive-green canvas holster. Then he unbuttoned the flap of Hendry's bulging breast pocket and took out the white canvas bag. He stood up, opened the mouth of the bag, and stirred the diamonds with his forefinger. Satisfied, he jerked the drawstring closed and dropped them into his own pocket. In death, he's even more repulsive than he was alive, thought Bruce, without regret, as he looked down at the corpse. The flies were crawling into the bloody nostrils and clustering round the eyes. Then he spoke aloud. So Mike Haig was right, and I was wrong. You can destroy it. Without looking back, he walked away. The tiredness left him.